For the meditation to go well, you have to like what you're doing. Because after all, it's a big job. Working through all the habits you have for creating suffering for yourself in all kinds of different ways. So it's not something to do in, say, a weekend retreat and think you've got it all done. It's a long-term process. And so for it to go well, if you like what you're doing, it goes a lot more easily. This is why when you're meditating, you want to become friends with your breath. Don't regard your meditation object as an opponent. Remember all that the breath has done for you. It's kept you alive all this time. It's what keeps the body and the mind together. And even right here in the present moment, you find that the breath gives a sense of pleasure. It can give the sense of pleasure if you allow it to. So explore that possibility. So that the idea of the breath as your friend is not simply an abstract idea, but you gain a sense of familiarity. You gain a sense of liking the breath. Using the breath to nourish the body. And whatever part of the body feels like it could use some breath energy, let it have it. No matter where in the body it may seem to be, no matter how it's going to come in or how it's going to go out, allow every part of the body to have some breath energy. So you get a really strong, visceral sense that the breath is a good place to be, a good companion to have on this path that we're following. It's the same principle that works on the external level. The Buddha places a lot of emphasis on harmony within the Sangha. That's why we have the Vinaya. To make sure that our life here together is a life conducive to the practice. People get along. Instead of dwelling on what they don't like about each other, thinking about what they do like about each other, and each person being willing to go out of his way for the other people. To have a kind of what the Thais call namchai, which probably is best translated either as generosity of spirit or warm-heartedness, the willingness to go that extra mile. Community life becomes a life that's conducive to the practice. The practice goes a lot more easily. And with the same principle of harmony inside as well. Learn how to get along with the breath. Don't go in with a lot of preconceived notions of what the breath has to be like. Explore, listen to the breath, see what it has to say. What would feel good right now? What kind of breathing, what breath would feel good right now? Coming in where? Going out where? And allow it to happen. Open up your preconceived notions about what's happening in the breathing, and you'll find a lot of different ways of breathing suddenly become possible. Then explore them to see which ones are really helpful right now and which ones are not so helpful. And as you get more and more familiar with the breath this way, there's a strong sense of what in Pali they call chanda, the desire to keep on with the practice. It's the first of the bases of success. If you want to succeed in meditation, the first thing you've got to do is to like your meditation object, like the process of meditating. Allow it to capture imagination, this breath energy in the body. How many different ways can it come in? How many different ways can it go out? How many varieties of breath are there? What can they do for different mental states? When you're angry, what's a good way to breathe to calm down the anger? When you're lazy, what's a good way to breathe to give yourself more energy? When you're feeling not quite right physically, what kind of breath is good for you? And as you set up these questions in your mind and begin to explore, You find that the breath really becomes something fascinating. Once it's captured your imagination, then you can get absorbed in it. They talk about jhana as mental absorption. And things are absorbing only when they're interesting. So see in what way the breath can become interesting. It's not just in, out, in, out, in, out. How many more ins and outs am I going to have to count until awakening comes? We're not doing this as a ritual, simply going through the motions and hoping that the motions will get us to where we want to go. After all, they call meditation practice. And as with any kind of practice, whether it's a musical instrument or a sport, it's how much attention you pay, how much you really look at what you're doing, that's going to improve it. How you find ways of doing it more efficiently with less and less wasted effort. And a greater sense of well-being to show for it. That has to start with liking the breath. And the second point is, second of the four bases for success is persistence. You really stick with it. You do it again, and then you do it again, and then you do it again. You keep at it. Be a breathaholic. They say that alcoholics, when they walk into somebody's house, will very quickly pick up on where the alcohol is stored. That's where their antennae are very sensitive. They may be missing a lot of other things that are going on in that particular house, but they're very quick to pick up on where the alcohol is kept. Well, you want to be a breathaholic. Have your antenna set for how can you stay with the breath in this situation? How can you stay with the breath in that situation? You're talking with somebody you don't like. How do you stay with the breath? You're talking with someone you do like. How do you stay with the breath? You're working at a task. How do you stay with the breath? Where is the breath? Have your antenna focused on that and keep at it in any and all situations. They've done studies of athletes, the athletes who are talented and very good, and the athletes who are talented and who are exceptionally good. And basically, in terms of their the raw material with which they're working, it's not that much different. Some people have a talent, other people don't have that much talent. But even with the talented ones, the difference between being good and being exceptional lies a lot in just how much time they devote to it. And it's the same with the breath. You might be a good meditator, but if you don't give that much time, you've got the talent, comes easily, but you don't take it as far as it can go. Because a lot of the meditation is your willingness to give. Give of your energy. Give of your time. Don't be stingy with your meditation. It's one of the reasons why generosity is emphasized as one of the virtues leading up to meditation. You're trying to develop that mind state where you're happy to give. Happy to share. Happy to go out of your way. What this means is that you're willing to put forth an effort even though the results may not be immediate. But in trusting that in terms of the larger good, in terms of the long-term good, this is for your own true well-being. And when you have that attitude towards the meditation, then it's a lot easier to put in the effort, to put in the extra hours, to sit through pain, to sit longer than you might otherwise. To sit when you don't feel like sitting. This is important. If we only sit when you feel like sitting, then that's all you know. The mind that likes to sit. As for the mind that doesn't like to sit, you never get to explore it. You never get to figure out why it doesn't like to sit. If you sit down and say, today's meditation is not going well, I'd better go do something else. That's the wrong attitude. It's not going well. Oh, let's see why. Look into it. And as you explore the mind that doesn't want to sit, you come to understand it. And also you come to learn how to work your way around it so that it doesn't, that's not the deciding factor as to whether or not you're going to sit, whether or not you're going to be with the breath. And over time you find that there are fewer and fewer and fewer circumstances, either physical or mental, or in terms of your surroundings, where you can't meditate. When there's a lot of noise, there's a certain way of meditating, a certain way of thinking about your body. It's this big screen that allows the noise to go through. You're not catching it. But first you have to see the mind catching the noise and complaining about the noise, and yet not being willing to believe the complaints. And noticing how the mind grabs on to things like this when it really doesn't have to. And that way, sitting in a noisy place, you learn something about the mind. And you learn to work your way around the defilements that are ordinarily so powerful. All this comes under persistence, just sticking with the meditation. Not thinking how many years you've meditated in the past, how many more years you're going to have to do it. You just stick with it right now, right now, right now. Don't carry the past and the future around as a burden. The present moment is sufficient for carrying the present moment, but it's not enough. Can't stand up under the weight of all your past and all your future. So when the meditation seems burdensome, just realizing you're holding on to the past of your meditation, you're holding on to the future of your meditation. Drop that and just be with it right now. That makes it a lot easier to stick with it, stick with it. And John Cha says sometimes your mind will say, how much longer am I going to sit here? And your answer should be, I don't know. Let's see. Can I sit with this breath? Can I sit with that breath? Sit with one breath at a time, and you find after all you get a lot of breaths under your belt, without you having to carry around or find them oppressive or burdensome. That's persistence, the second of the basis for success. The third is, in Pali, is called citta, which means that you're really intent on what you're doing. You pay attention. You notice things. Try to be as sensitive as possible to how the breathing feels. Be as sensitive as possible to what state your mind is in as you're coming into the meditation. Sometimes you're coming in with an overactive mind. Sometimes you're coming in with an underactive mind. Sometimes you're coming in with a discouraged mind. And if that's the case, then you have to stop before you focus on the breath and straighten out the mind a little bit. Figure out ways of thinking that bring the mind more into balance. Or if it's simply a question of too much or too little energy, and figure out what kind of breathing would be good for mind that has too much energy. What breathing is good for mind with too little energy? Focus on that. Try to be sensitive to what you're doing and the results that you're getting. Understanding that you're not here waiting for the future or anticipated things in the future to come, but paying very careful attention to what you're doing right now. If you lose that focus, then you've lost the focus of the meditation. You're just sitting and anticipating. And anticipation is not one of the factors of the path. Certainly not one of the factors of concentration. Just focus on what you've already got. And the next question is, what would be a more pleasant breath? What would be sensitive. The more sensitive you are to how your breathing feels throughout the body, the more you'll know intuitively what kind of breathing will feel good. So again, we're not just going through the motions. We're trying to watch each time we breathe to see if we can catch something in the breathing that we didn't notice before. In particular in the direction of figuring out what kind of breathing would feel better right now. Better being defined by what the body needs, what the mind needs. at that particular moment. This requires that you be very attentive to what you're doing. You can't anticipate that by simply following the steps that you read in a book or do the method that they tell you without your putting this quality of attentiveness in, you can't anticipate to get the results. Simply going through the motions doesn't do it. You have to watch. You have to make the practice your practice through your quality of intention, attention, intentness. You're not here to learn about Buddhism. You're here to learn about your own mind. Buddhism gives you the tools and points you in places where you might see something interesting, but it's up to you to see. Fourth quality, Pali is Vimangsa. And it's translated in lots of different ways. Basically, it comes down to the mind's analytical abilities. We're often taught, get away from the discriminating mind, allow everything to be one. But I haven't seen that in the Buddhist teachings. The oneness comes in being focused with a sense of oneness with the object. But you have to be discriminating in how you're doing it. Because if things are not going well, you've got to figure out what might be better. And that involves using your imagination as well. Not in the sense of sitting here and daydreaming, but sitting here and thinking about what other kinds of breathing are possible. What other kinds of ways of focusing are possible? If the mind is in no mood to stay with the breath, okay, what other kinds of topics can you think about? Then when you come up with an idea, try it. Put it to work. And then be very judicious in how you look at the results. If it seems to be working, continue with it. If you begin to notice that it's not really working well, be willing to drop it. Think about the Buddha when he'd gone through all those years of austerities. He tried all the austerities he'd ever heard of and could imagine. Hadn't worked. He had lived the life of a prince in a palace with all kinds of pleasures. That hadn't worked in terms of the search of the deathless. You can imagine how totally lost he must have felt at that point. But then he was able to stop and think, well, what other alternatives are there? He thought of the time when, as a child, he'd sat under a tree and his mind had settled into concentration with a sense of ease and well-being. That required an act of imagination, not only the memory, but also coming up with that particular memory and deciding that he wanted to try that approach next. Realizing that it was in the middle way between two extremes. He'd been thinking only in extremes. And all too often when we're faced with issues that come up when we're meditating, we tend to think in one extreme or the other. They can only say a few alternatives. And when we've exhausted those alternatives, we feel pretty lost. That's when you have to realize, well, there must be other alternatives. You may be framing the issue wrong. Step back a bit and think about what other alternatives there might be. All of this comes under Vimangsa, this your ability to analyze, your ability to play with what you're doing and come up with other possibilities and try those. And it's these qualities all together, the liking of the meditation, the want, the desire to do it, the persistent sticking with it. No matter how much you want to, or no matter how much you don't want to, but knowing that deep down inside, this is what you want to do. Being attentive and using your powers of analysis. These are the things that bring success in meditation. And some people shrink from the use of the word success, because if there's success, then there's also failure. They don't like to think that. But there are ways of getting better results in the meditation and the ways of missing out on the results that you could get. So think it more in the terms of getting the most out of the meditation. Exploring it to see how far it can go. Using these qualities, because these are the qualities that are demanded. When you stop and think about it, these are the qualities that underlie any kind of success in any activity. You have to like to do it. You have to be persistent. You have to be attentive. Use your powers of analysis. These apply to any and all jobs. And if you're the sort of person who takes pride in doing a job well, you've got a lot of the psychological attitude you need for the meditation to work well. Slapdash meditation gives only slapdash results. Meditation that's done with a sense of properly focused desire, focused on the causes of what you want, persistence, intentness, sensitivity, using your powers of analysis and imagination properly focused. That kind of meditation opens up all kinds of possibilities, brings all kinds of results that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. So it's what you bring to the meditation that determines it, the results more than anything else. The exercises are there, they're in the book. But in following them, you have to bring these qualities. This is what you add to the picture. This is what you add to the equation. It's these qualities that make all the difference. And that's the best thing about the practice. It depends on what you bring to it. Depends on what you give to it. It places the responsibility on you, but also it places the power in your hands.